The last full moon of that spring came a little more than a month before school let out for summer vacation. Our town's long nightmare began that night.
Holy jumped up bald-headed Jesus Palomino! This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 174. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian, he says, yeah, whenever he runs over a bug with his bike Dunaway.
Yeah. Hey, sis, you'll never believe what I built the kid. Yeah, well, what's the worst that could happen with a gas-powered wheelchair? Oh, yeah, I forgot about the gas-powered tricycle. He was all like, never walked again. Holy pumped up Palomino, I'm drunk.
Nicely done. Awesome. Joining us also, Randy, sorry I was distracted and set the bear trap off twice on your leg, Jordan.
I'm in the same place. Aloha, Brian. Brian, Scott. You know, I always thought I'd turn out to be the wacky uncle for my nieces and nephew. I had all the makings. Wild hair, a penchant for encouraging mostly harmless misbehaviors, a well-documented ability to stay up late and frustrate my siblings. But you know what I realized I was missing now? That's right. Big, huge, gigantic, scary yellow teeth. Damn it. Busey taught me the way too late.
That's fantastic. Awesome. Finally with us, Brian. Hey, let me stare at you for 30 seconds and see if you have both eyes or not. Ibbit.
We all seem to go to the same place on this one. Kid paralyzed from the waist down. Big Oaf responsible for him getting around. Whoa, holy cow, Gary Busey basically plays Hodor with a vocabulary.
Oh, nicely done. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Film Sack. We are covering the fine film Silver Bullet. Available for free on YouTube. If you haven't seen it yet and you're listening to this first, go and watch it. Absolutely right. For free.
Based on Stephen King's novella, Cycle of the Werewolf.
Yeah, this is that right. Back in the day when nobody was giving Stephen King novels any real good treatment. Like, they were like, yeah, he's popular, let's make real bad movies about it.
Yeah, let's stick a Green Goblin head on that truck and call it a movie. Okay, next.
No, I think it's got something to do with the fact that this was a badly written thing. I don't think it was... I don't think they had a good source to start.
Have you read this? You've read this.
I'm going to...
Have you read this story?
Well, I don't remember not. I've read a lot of his smaller books, novellas and things. Richard Cheese. What did he write under? Richard Bachman.
Bachman
Used to spit on every book and sell it.
Yeah, that was great.
Thinner.
I never read one I didn't like. So what's wrong with this one? Just not good. Not a good tale.
No, it sucks. It's just like Maximum Overdrive or Christine or others.
Wait. I got to know, when you say the story, are you talking about the concept? Or are you talking about the dialogue?
He's talking about the actual book that Stephen King wrote.
But we're always talking about concept, right? Because you take a concept, you turn it into a film, you rewrite it, basically. You're like, maybe he had some good dialogue that they keep. For example, Rita Hayworth in Shawshank Redemption had some great dialogue that was just ported right into the movie.
You're telling me the concept of a kid. You're telling me the concept of a kid who is confined to a wheelchair that his uncle turns into a death machine is not a good concept. And werewolves.
It's a Stephen King concept, it was better on the page, and not because written words are better than movies, because there's some movies that I think are better. Like, I hate to say this, but honestly, the Lord of the Rings movies are better than sort of some of the ham-fisted stuff.
I agree with that.
But like, I was just trying to give you an example there.
That's a fine example.
I didn't mean to kill my partner.
Well, you could argue that Shawshank Redemption and Green Mile are both better because of the films. The books are okay. Mm-hmm. I've read them both; they're fine. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing real special going on. It's special. in film because Darabont is really good at taking King stuff and making it better. But I'm saying, where the hell was Darabont in 1984 when we needed him? You know, when all this stuff was shit, because it is all terrible. Right. Like, Stephen King adaptations are really, really bad. Not to say, by the way, to say this right up front, Silver Bullet might be one of the most, it's easily on the short list of one of the most perfect film sackable movies we've seen, period. But it doesn't, we're not saying that it's a very good movie at all. It's terrible.
Wait, I'm telling you, if I was to write a review, a one-word review, it would be awesome. That would just be it.
Yeah, but
awesome.
You think it's awesome for the ironic reasons,
for
right?
The kid, no, what, for the cheese factor.
I do and don't.
I love the cheese factor, by the way. I go there on Saturdays. They have this amazing cheesecake. The cheese factor is really good. Anyway.
I'll tell you, this is not as good as Fear Factor.
No.
It's
all pig's factors.
I tell you, Stephen King is the master at figuring out impossibly scary, relatable situations that can just suck you in. He preys on the fear. And what could be better than a fear of something that you can not only not get away from, but you take it to the next level and go, okay, not only can you not do that, you can't walk. Imagine if you can't walk
on
top of
you're right. And he does play with – he plays with handicap characters quite a bit in many films books. None of them are immune to this.
James Caan, he was totally handicapped after he
got there he is now.
Hobbled.
But like in other stuff, like I don't know. I'm trying to think of – like the Dark Tower books is full of people who've got real disabilities that – you're right. He likes to prey on the fear, those kinds of weird fears. He just does it way better in the books than in the films. There's nothing perfect about this film at all. It's a perfect storm of bad. It's bad acting. It's bad filmmaking. It's got Gary Busey in it, which makes it better in a weird way. Like, you know, there's nothing in here, though, that you're going to go, yeah, what happened, Oscars 1995 or 85? What happened over there?
It does follow the Stephen King formula pretty closely. You get your small town. You've got clergy that's involved some way, whether or not they're drunks who are always the first to die.
You either have demons or aliens in every single one. Right, coming from hell or space, one or the other.
Sometimes both.
Right. Yeah.
Could that quote live on for a while, everybody out there? Could somebody make a t-shirt? You're either from hell or space, one or the other.
That's all the bad guys. When we started watching Under the Dome,
I
everybody at work was like, well, I didn't read that book. What do you think caused the dome? Hell or space? There's only two options with Stephen King.
It's one or the other, and he's not gonna do a very good job of explaining either hell nor space. Mm-hmm. And I agree with all of these things you're saying. Stephen King has a very tropified method of writing, but I've loved every book I ever read. And like Needful Things or even The Mist, which I know we argue about on the show. Love.
Seriously, Loved?
I don't think I've read Loved.
No, I'm saying you've loved everything Stephen King wrote.
I'm sorry. I thought there was some book I hadn't heard of called Loved.
I'm questioning your choice of
I have not read every book he's ever written, but every book I've read, I've loved.
Every one you read?
I'll tell you the ones I've loved the most.
You read Insomnia?
Yes, I liked Insomnia a lot.
That was a good movie. That was a good book.
Not just because it was tangentially connected to The Dark Tower, not because of that, although it was. Right. And there was it truly is a side story from that thing. But I loved that story. I love the perspective of an old man who can't sleep. I love the idea of what he was seeing when he couldn't sleep. Like, all that stuff is great. I really, really enjoyed that. I loved The Cell, or just Cell, rather. The one about cell phone zombies.
Right. We did this on FilmSack a couple months ago.
Yeah, I like him.
Rose Matter, Dreamcatcher, Insomnia, Regulators, and Tommyknockers are five of the worst books ever written.
I've only read one of those. Insomnia is the only one I read out of all those. So
Lucky. I've read at least three of those, and those were weren't bad. Cause I'll tell you, Stephen King does. If you've ever read any book, he has a book on his writing. If you look, Stephen King on
writing. We talked about that too. A couple
it's a fantastic book, and he makes everything simple, and it works.
Okay,
it works.
I
you know what I mean.
There is a yes. He take okay. Give me, all right, Randy, back to you here on this real quick. Actually, before we do that, let's do this. Hold on, hold on. Scott Fletcher, explain.
Silver bullet. When a sleepy town is terrorized by sadistic murders, the locals conclude that the culprit is a werewolf. But only Marty, a 13-year-old boy in a wheelchair, is brave enough to try to track down the mysterious beast.
All right, so now you know the story. So back to this whole idea. If you say this is true, those are the five worst books ever written, or some of the worst. Is there a Stephen King book, series, trilogy, whatever, that you feel the opposite about? Like you actually really thought it was great?
Yeah, we talked about this. We talked about this a couple
of times.
We did.
I don't remember any of this conversation.
I think
I don't either.
Was it when we did Children of the Corn? I can't remember exactly what episode.
Wow, that was many more months than months ago.
But
that
we
could have been Pet Cemetery or something. Ibbot doesn't remember. That might be why. Yeah.
So, probably my favorite book of all time is The Dark Tower 4, Wizard in Glass. If you cut off the bookends with the train and you just give me the story in the middle, which is the middle 80% of the book, that is essentially my favorite book of all time.
Yep.
Stephen King is the guy who wrote Misery. He wrote The Shining. He wrote It. Like these are just tremendous, tremendous books. Salem's Lot started the Dracula concept over entirely for a new generation.
Yeah.
The Dead Zone is amazing. I highly, highly recommend. Mm-hmm. Just mentioned Under the Dome. I don't understand how the hell they're making it a TV series, but whatever.
I don't either. A three-part miniseries maybe, but a series of shows that last a whole season and then start with a new season, I don't know how they're doing that at all.
No clue.
Totally agree. Also, isn't it amazing how much more, this is just a side note, how much more work and quality and amazing performance that Vince Gilligan coaxes out of Hank on mm-hmm. Breaking Bad, and how little they coax out of him on Under the Dome. He's good, but he's not Hank good. Isn't
right.
that weird?
Right.
It's weird. Just a different, different passion, different something's going on there. Like,
seriously, The Dark Tower is the answer to your question. The Wizard in Glass is so good that for the fifth book, Stephen King just came up with different characters and put them in the same exact situation and just remade the fourth book as a fifth book. Like, it's the same story again. That's how good that book is.
It is really good. It's fantastic.
I highly recommend stuff. But if you find yourself on a train across the Yukon and all you've got is the Tommyknockers and a hammer, hit yourself in the head and go to sleep.
Love that.
That's awesome.
I will give Randy props for reading all these books, and I know he's honestly read them, and I love the fact that he can say that five of them were sucky.
Oh, that's fine. Look, yeah. I admit that some of it's kind of trashy and stupid, but I think this is where I'm agreeing with Randy or with Brian Dunaway, is that trashy, stupid thing is somehow covered up by the way it may even be a cheap way of writing. I don't know. There's a reason the guy's always got money and has been one of the most successful writers in the history of this country, but in terms of money, but he does things in a way that make me go, oh yeah, that's kind of a dumb concept, but I'm totally in. Let's keep reading this. He's a dime store novel author in those ways. He's right. He's what people used to get a kick out of when they'd buy like a dime
pulp.
Yeah, very pulpy. For yeah. sure, like modern pulp author, and I'm cool with that. I'm down with that. But I will encore what you just said about Wizards in Glass. That's a fantastic book. By even if you never read the rest of that series, and I still recommend you.
Yeah,
it stands on its own. It's amazing.
I wish there was a version of Wizard in Glass that cut off the bookends, mm-hmm. and just you could just hand it to someone who'd never read any of it and just read this.
I'm gonna make you a version. I'm going to read a paperback.
Rip a bunch of papers out.
The paperback version.
I like that.
I'm just going to rip the cover off.
Yeah. Or just get the audiobook and cut out the first chunk and then re-edit the MP3 and send it over to Randy's house.
Right.
I'm with you on that. All right. So point being, that's the movie. Daniel Attias, or however you say his last name, this guy directed it. I thought, well, wow, he's a nobody because this movie clearly blows and he's done nothing since. Oh, was I wrong? Looked up this guy's directing work. Just look at the litany of things he's done. He is responsible for handfuls, 16 total episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He directed most of the 2011 season, I want to say, or maybe the 2012 season of The Killing. Bunch of True Blood stuff. Raising Hope, which is hilarious. Three of those episodes. Right. Homeland, American, two of those.
American Dreams, that was a great series.
Yep. Episode of The Walking Dead. Hung, which everyone thought was real funny. Mm-hmm. House MD, 8 episodes of those. 10 episodes of Entourage. Bunch of Big Love episodes. Like Lost. I mean,
couple Lost episodes.
Yeah. Heroes,
Six
which is too bad.
Under,
The Wire.
6 Feet Under, Alias.
Friday Night Lights. I mean, seriously. The TV. Deadwood, yeah. Dude. He freaking did an episode of Deadwood, for heaven's sakes.
This is a very successful television director.
Absolutely. But his movie stuff, you know, like not so great. He did a whole bunch of Northern Exposure episodes, but still one of my favorite shows of all time. So even back that far ago, that long ago, he was making good work. But Silver Bullet, that's just poo.
Well, and that, and it's funny because I see that as I'm scrolling through here, and it looks like Silver Bullet is his own movie.
Right.
Direction.
He's done some second unit directing where he was doing bigger stuff. Like he backed up Spielberg and some stuff, E.T., you know, Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff. I'm curious about these episodes because these are great TV series we mentioned, but you know every TV series can have a bad episode or two. I'm just curious if all these had like werewolves in it or kids in wheelchairs. Or,
well, you know, certainly like all these Always Sunny in Philadelphia episodes had werewolves in them.
Yeah,
but right. No, he didn't do the Lost that introduced Nikki and Paolo, which is what I'd expect.
yeah, you think, oh well, this guy's clearly done the poo episodes of Lost, but no.
Right, no, they're all good, you know. It's all good.
Yeah. So props to this guy for doing things well out of his pay grade when it came to after watching. I mean, I saw this and just went, no way, this guy's good at anything, and he's clearly.
Speaking of John Locke.
Yeah.
Yes.
A few days ago, Brian Dunaway says John Locke has a cameo in Silver Bullet. No, it's not a cameo, dude. I just want you to know.
Yeah,
it's a role. It's true. It's true. In looking back, it's not definitely not a cameo. I was trying to be humorous, but
it was a smaller role and it was a very stereotypic kind of tropey role. He's the sheriff that doesn't agree with anybody and thinks everything's just fine and play it by the rules and you know.
Yeah, he was nobody at this point that I had ever heard of at when this movie came out. So I didn't realize it was him. But going back, watching, I was like, that guy looks really familiar.
Oh, yeah. Way before his years on, I mean, 5-6 years away before X-Files was a thing and he was on there. It was way before Millennium or any of these other things he would be on.
Oh, Millennium.
Yeah. A couple of movies here and there, but this is mostly kind of very early. It doesn't even look like him. He's got a full head of hair.
Right.
He looks about 20. It's really strange. And he's kind of a spaz.
But the voice is always the same.
Yeah.
It's always that.
And he's the one F-bomb the movie gets to have.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Is on the phone. Well, him and the guy that repeated it, the fat guy that was with him. And I only call him fat because everyone else in the movie called him fat. I can get away with it. Corey Haim, I went down a dark tunnel. I told Ibbett and Dunaway this before we started recording tonight that I watched this and immediately went and wanted to kind of catch up on what Corey Haim's life looked like again, right. From the beginning to the end. And man, what a miserable, terrible, awful, wrong end of the stick. He was always on with drugs and everything else and just this horrific, harrowing tales of being a kid in Hollywood and being mistreated there and then growing up in that and getting into drugs when he was 15 and being an addict his entire life. The last week of his, or no, last month of his death, which technically was due to pneumonia, but doctors say lots of things contributed, but he had procured something like 700 different prescription pills through all these weird sources he had just to kind of keep going. He was doing like 87 or 89 Xanax a day, like crazy numbers that should have been toxic to anybody. He'd become sort of tolerant or whatever. But anyway,
you know what?
Just sad.
You know what? Corey Haim was a pretty good actor.
He was.
Especially when he was a kid. He had an understanding of how a kid would react to different things. Like I noticed he just has these little facial expressions that I thought were surprisingly good.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
Lucas,
again,
you know, you look back at a film like Lucas and you think, oh, okay, this, you know, this is, he's got the chops. He's got the real deal. He's got the talent. But then he gets kind of pulled into the whole Dream a Little Dream and Driver's License or whatever that one was called.
Right.
License to Drive.
Those all got a little bit weird. Yeah. I still think the best work he did was in Lost Boys, which we covered on this show. And I thought he was great in that.
Fantastic.
by then, like, he was coasting, but, like, seeing this movie reminded me that there's a thing I always wonder about, and that's, am I seeing a kid that's a really good actor, or am I seeing the 107th take that the director forced on this poor child that actually worked out? And you never know. But I just have this feeling that Corey Haim was pretty darn good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He would.
I don't think we were ever going to see like an Oscar.
No,
you know, a best actor Oscar.
Maybe if he just stayed out of drugs.
You
maybe.
Never know. You just never know. Like Lindsay Lohan could turn. No, that's not true.
Yeah, but look, I think Lindsay Lohan is capable of it, but I think her lifestyle's ruining that. She's talented as hell, and I see
I
her
think
in things.
She was really
and go,
good in that that Lake Wobegon days.
She was
Prairie Home Companion thing. Yeah,
she was really good in it, and I've seen her in other things where she was, you know, she could go on to do other things. But here's the problem: for every one Ron Howard, there are 900 Corey Haims, and usually those Corey Haim stories end in tragedy or just complete, you know, annihilation or something. And once in a while, you got Ron Howard. Well, why do you have Ron Howard? He had really good parents, and he hung around with Andy Griffith all day, who freaking protected him.
Exactly. Who was the people around him who was protecting him? And
yeah.
We kind of touched this a little bit. And what we say, who was Corey Haim's brain trust?
The other Let's Corey.
Corey right. Feldman, yeah.
The Corey Feldman, you know, and I'm sure Gary Busey gave him lots of great advice during the filming.
Yeah,
sure
that worked out.
Yeah,
and I was reading while I was going down this rabbit hole. He lived in Robert Downey Jr.'s apartment for like months and months on end when he was like 12 or 13 or some teenage age before he really got into drugs heavily. But he's living with Robert Downey Jr. before Robert Downey Jr. is any kind of huge star, and is basically sleeping in cocaine. Like that was the time when he was really falling apart. And here's Corey Haim, an underage kid, living with him. Like, I don't know what was going on there, but. Again, for a kid who's clearly got proclivities toward addiction, this is all bad news. And there's a lot of other seedy stuff that I'm not even going to mention here that just got real bad for the kid. So I just feel like there was a lost opportunity here. He needed an Andy Griffith early on.
Absolutely.
Kind of pull him under his wing, you know.
Help him. Need Andy Griffith.
Because Hollywood's, it's a shithole for kids. It's bad. It's not good. Now, it's not everybody, and I'm sure there's cases where you could argue it, but whatever. But you never hear happy stories later. Mm-hmm. Lindsay Lohan's not fine. And you can't blame just Hollywood. You can't blame just her parents. Probably a combination of things. But anyway.
Now, there was also Megan Follows, who was in this movie. And I thought I actually really dug the...
Oh, Anne of Green Gables. Yeah.
Right. She done pretty decent. And I really dug... I thought it was fantastic when she was going around the town trying to find the person with the one eye.
I hated that so much.
The Cinderella eye thing. I thought that was actually...
Why did you hate that? That was clever.
The way
and
it was
well,
done.
Well presented. Like, when she's pulling the towel off the dude who's getting the longest hot towel treatment ever. Like, I thought that was pretty good.
I hated that because, first of all, some 13-year-old girl's never going to be allowed to walk into the barbershop and have Floyd going, well, how you doing, Junior? Something, talking, like everything's great. Let me just sneak on over to one of your customers, pull his towel half off, have a tiny conversation, put it back on.
There was one thing that struck me in that whole sequence, and that is that she goes into a restaurant and asks people, no one speaks back to her.
Not
no
one. Like, it's
they,
so
are
creepy.
They all mute? Why are they all so quiet?
That's why I didn't like it.
What do you expect from this town that every town decision is made at the bar?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's all go down to the bar and let's make decisions.
That's what we'll organize our riot. Yeah.
Right. I just don't like movies that wears its intentions so on their sleeve when it's like, oh, clearly someone's missing an eye. So let's be real methodical and careful about this because who knows who doesn't have the other eye. Might it be the preacher who's turned the other way, obviously, until he turns the other way and then, oh, no, how shocking. It's him with the eye missing.
Right. I'm not going to lie. This movie was really – and this happened a lot during the 80s. A lot of movies were directly pointed towards, you know, kids of 12 to 14 and kind of that age group. And it is. It's, you know, it's the all adults are stupid trope, but it's all adults are evil in this movie. So,
Or they're all suspect at least.
Right. They're either stupid or they're evil. And, you know, that was the whole thing, you know, that – and this kid's going into this adult world and trying to find that one-eyed person and it being somebody that was a leader in the community. I thought it worked out pretty well.
It was okay. But here's the thing that I kept doing. I would notice that a guy that she would ask in the montage, I'd notice that his one eye was a little wonky. Like he'd turn the other way and go, there is something wrong with his eye. Like I'd start questioning whether or not
Right.
That was supposed to be it. But it was just a guy with a lazy eye.
It was Lawrence Tierney that I think that was the one we were looking at like that.
Yep.
Was there ever anything more Stephen King-y than when you realized it was the priest?
No.
No.
Right.
No. Yeah. There's always a religious aspect.
Always. And it's always, they're always a bastard, and they're always terrible, and they're always the reason everyone sucks. Like in The Mist, that chick that's the... She's just the born again in the store. She starts riling everyone up to violence. Why? Because she somehow convinced him it needs to be a holy war. And
seriously, like, I want to go to Stephen King and ask, where did the priest touch you? Seriously,
right? Like, right.
So it's every one of the. It was so telegraphed from the beginning. Every time you saw that guy, like, oh, he's a bad guy.
Right.
Yeah. He looks like a bad guy.
Well, yeah, he did the whole time, and even when he had his dream, and we'll talk about that dream later. But
dream a little dream.
They were trying to say, oh no, this preacher's just dealing with all this death around him and doesn't know what to do, and he can't be anyone's spiritual leader because this is so much bigger than him, and now he's waking up from the dream, and when he says, God, please make it stop, you want to make him think, oh, he's just talking about the killings, but no, he's talking about make me stop because I'm the problem.
Right.
But then later in the movie, working on the garden, talking to the girl, did he have to go, yes. Everything will be fine, little girl.
Everything will be fine, Clarice.
Yeah, like come on.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't like these half-assed bad guys. That's a trope, by the way.
Yeah.
The half-assed bad guy by the light of day. Yeah. By the light of day,
bad guy. He tries to run a kid in a wheelchair off a bridge.
In reality, by the light of day, this guy just takes a garden rake and just kills you.
Yeah.
But no, in a movie, he's got to talk real clever shit.
Right. Oh, he has a great line, though, that I captured that I cannot wait to play.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah, he's real good in this. All right. Kind of a handsome guy. Oh, by the way, for a second there, I don't know if it was intentional. Probably not, because production value kind of sucked. I felt like they were using old 80s video tape for some reason. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there's the scene where it's the first time you see him in the church, and there's lots of candles behind him, and two of them are very strategically placed to look like horns on his head. So like these little flickering red horns.
I did not catch that.
Yeah, it's the first thing. I tried to back up and cap it, but I was having a hard time getting it. Anyway, here's some fun trivia. Trivia says, shooting started without a proper werewolf suit, so that might tell you something about his production.
Finished without one, too.
Sorry. Yeah, it makes a good point. There never really was a quote-unquote proper werewolf suit.
Brian makes a point.
Uh-huh. I should play that. Why don't I have that?
Brian makes a point.
There you go.
It's basically Wampa arm on a stick, just like they had in
True Story.
Have you ever seen animal movies like Air Bud and all the many, many sequels.
I've seen one Air Bud movie. Yes.
I've not seen any of those.
Like the way they make it look like dogs can really do something awesome, and they do this in so many movies, is they show the dog like approaching something, then you see the something being pulled off the tabletop, but you don't see the dog doing it.
Right.
And then you see the dog has it in its mouth and it's going somewhere with it. And this movie had a ton of that around the werewolf. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
Why not just show me the freaking werewolf? I don't want to see his big toenail. No. I don't. Like, I did.
Oh, no, you didn't, Brian. You didn't. You didn't want to wait 45 minutes to an hour to see this thing for the first time and only up from the neck up. You didn't want that.
But the funny thing is, in some scenes, there was a scene that I think it's when right before he got shot in the other eye.
I know. I that's great too. Yeah. Like,
right.
Where'd you shoot? Well, the other eye. I'm only let me shoot eyes.
Let me shoot in the eye with this freaking Roman candle piece of crap firework that should never pierce anything.
Which, by the way, never exploded.
Right.
It just drove into his eye and continued to spark for a full minute and it never popped. And I'm like, where's the pop? Give me the pop.
So, but there's one scene where it's he's like it's like somebody in costume design did not understand that it was supposed to be a scary werewolf, and so they really methodically combed all of his hair. So I mean, he's like really well groomed in like a couple of shots where the werewolf is just like totally well groomed.
Like he's really good. Yeah, he got like pomade in his hair and
right, and like the next scene he's like all bushy.
Yeah.
It's scary. So,
well, they kept jumping. There's other stuff in the trivia about it. They kept jumping around with different suits and different heads, and they never, nobody was ever happy with the suit or the head.
I don't like this head.
Like the movie finished, the director was like, ugh, we hate this werewolf suit. And other people were like, well, the guy in it wasn't acting well. And Stephen King was like, I washed my hands of the whole thing. I washed my hands of the whole thing.
Watch out for that van.
Yeah. So I don't know why all that stuff is so bad, but I'll tell you what. The dad, Herb, whose kid got killed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was just peppered in there for
Street
one more story.
Justice.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah,
you mean Herb that carries around the Polaroid of his mauled child?
Yes. Yes.
See, here's a picture. I took this picture.
Here's what I loved about Herb.
Took it to get developed at the photo mat and waited
an hour.
Week.
Yeah, waited an hour. Oh, yeah, back then it was probably a week. But here's what I loved about that guy. He had on, it cracked me up, and I know I wasn't supposed to be laughing. It was a terrible tragedy and all this, but he had that same suit on for every scene he was in. So finding where his son was, screaming like a freak. He's in church the next day for the funeral. He's got the same suit on, comes to break up the cafe fight in the same suit again. Like you literally hired that guy for like 2 hours of work, and he walked around a room, filmed three scenes, and then went home.
I thought it was a character study.
Shut up.
Right, but a guy who just couldn't get over everything, so he just wore the same suit.
Yeah.
I'm not getting undressed.
Right.
The only suit that's got a good photo pocket inside the inside pocket, inside left pocket.
Unbelievable.
So you're arguing that guy was doing the, what's that method called? The the De Niro does it method.
Yes, bad method De Niro.
Acting? The what? Yeah.
Method acting?
Method acting. You're saying that guy was method acting, Brian Dunaway?
Absolutely. 100%. Okay. They kept trying to talk him into changing a different costume. He's like, no!
No.
Great. Great, great. All right. Well, here's a trope.
Okay.
This is kind of a cheat.
Let's do it. Let's hear it.
All of them. All of the tropes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Every trope ever.
Every
is
trope.
I tell you, in every Stephen King film, there's always some dude that all he is just like one-liners.
Yep.
And we had one of those guys in here, and he was the bar guy, and he was killing me with some of the one-liners and the stuff like electrocute all the cripples to balance the budget, and I mean just, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a jerk.
Yep.
Love
and
him.
It's you know one of these things where they show you basically. I mean they practically printed on their forehead next to die. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you the trope that drove me crazy. Even though I think it's really awesome when I see it, is the whole Sam Raimi framing of a weapon in a hand, right?
Right.
Like with the werewolf, just the hand.
Bat.
Yeah. Like that. Oh. That thing where you see just from the wrist up,
yeah,
right before it comes down and hits the cop,
yeah,
who any cop in the world, realizing that he had gone into a garage and was facing down his prey and was in danger, would have just backed out of the garage.
Yeah.
Why did you just back out? But no, you see the reverend holding a, I don't know, what, a cudgel, right? And you see it from the wrist up, and I loved that, and I hated it at the same time.
Yep, it's easy to love and hate it.
I thought that was the peacemaker, what was left of it. Was it
okay.
Not?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, it was.
Right.
Okay, the drunk guy at the beginning who got killed and had his head cut off.
Yeah.
Two things I noticed. He's the guy from Silverado that's hanging out with Scott Glenn when they're faking like there's a whole posse after him, and they're trying to get their horses and that big box of money back. And everyone has seen that movie a little. I'm talking about, but it's when he goes, yeah, I think you're lying. I think there's one guy up in them hills and you down here and you're trying to get our babe, babe. That guy was the drunk guy. Here's the part. Now, I recognize him and know him, so it made it even worse because when they cut his head off, that was not his prosthetic head. That was some other fake head from some other movie.
Some other movie, right?
Yeah.
Just happened to have this.
Close enough.
That's when I knew we were in for trouble here. I went, oh, okay. Right. They borrowed that from somebody's office.
Hey, can I use this? I'm making a movie. What? Super efficient for the werewolf, the first kill with that with the drunk guy. Head right off,
yeah.
Doomed.
Yeah.
You know?
No
then
problem.
Suicide girl, let's stretch
but
this,
at some
let's
point,
tear this. Let's
at some point, your prey becomes a kid with a hot rod freaking wheelchair, and you're a werewolf. You don't have that kind of speed. I was waiting for the werewolf to start riding a motorcycle. I really was.
Well, that would have been
needed a full costume for that.
Mm-hmm. No,
his hair blowing in the wind and everything. That would be matter of fact. They should have done that in Twilight with old, you know. Yeah, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Right, right. Now, they had a chick in the bucket. Did you guys catch this?
Hold on, I got a sound for that. Now, you ready? Go, chick in the bucket.
It's Corey Haim at the top of the steps wondering when his mom is going to come get him because she just put him on that little stair step wheelchair thingy, mm-hmm. and she just sent him on up out of sight, out of mind, right at the steps. Stayed downstairs and kept talking to Uncle Busey.
Yep, Uncle Busey.
Like, dude,
you're right about that. The mom was kind of that, but I felt like the girl's narration was the chick in the bucket, because she would come in early and go, "That's what was happening in our town," or whatever, and then disappear for what felt like hours and days, and then suddenly come back and go, "My brother didn't know that, Dad." I'm like, really whoa, loud. Who are you, dude?
Really, this really loud narrator voice out of nowhere. Yeah.
She was chicken the bucket back and forth.
I want to get back to Brian Dunaway's point here. I have read Cycle of the Werewolf. I cannot explain to you what Marty's affliction is in this movie. I cannot explain it. Sometimes he's really, really weak. Sometimes they show him climbing in a window.
How he pulls himself up the tree.
I know, like the upper body strength.
He is
climbing
not
up a tree.
Amazing.
But he's not even somebody who works his own wheelchair. So, like, what the hell? How does he? I can't explain it. I have no explanation.
Was I supposed to laugh so uncontrollably when they showed all the new coffins and then sang Amazing Grace like a bunch of idiots where they couldn't sync up their swaying and stuff? I was dying.
They were swaying like in unison, like each row alternating the opposite direction for their sway.
It was like watching that kind of parallax animation with like water with a ship in it and they got separate moving waves. That's what that looked like to me. And then when it was his dream, so okay, I'll give you that. It was a dream.
Oh, yeah, right. That's true.
But then when everyone's turned into werewolves, I don't think it was supposed to be so funny when the organist lady turned into a werewolf. She's still pounding on the keys, dude, and there's blood spattering the keys. I was laughing so hard. That was so stupid. But let's see what else.
Well, I tell you, I love Corey Haim's ransom letter he sent to the priest, which was "Go kill yourself."
Yeah,
which was fantastic.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Why don't you go kill yourself?
I know what you did last night on the train tracks.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Are the eyes so quick? Just let's do a little lore discussion. Are the eyes the place you aim for when you're trying to kill a werewolf the first time, or
if you've got a silver bullet, you can pretty much That is a good question. Can you shoot a werewolf in the finger with a silver bullet and kill him?
Yes.
Any contact?
Yes. With the silver bullet.
You graze him on the arm.
Yes.
Okay. So you put it in his pocket.
You shoot through a toenail.
You stick it in his marsupial patch.
Do not argue with Stephen King, Ryan.
If the werewolf's running away and I throw a silver bullet at his back, will that kill him?
He gets
it has to puncture. It has to puncture.
Okay. All right.
Let's get back to the eye horror trope.
He said puncture, not penetrate.
Oh. Yeah.
Can I shove it up his ass?
Silver bullet suppository.
Right.
But you couldn't find it with a metal detector anyway, so.
Go get one of those.
Let's come back to the – I want to talk about the eye horror trope.
All right.
Okay.
Eyes, because – I was really bothered by this, and it reminded me of many, many movies. And I'm just wondering, when you think of eye horror, what comes to mind? What's the movie that just like
Blade Runner?
Eye horror?
Yeah.
Yes. Eyeballs. Minority Report.
Oh.
Had to get that in this week. That's our goal, is to talk about that once every week.
Interesting.
Another one would be
Daddy jams his thumbs into the eyes of what's-his-face in Blade Runner for me, man.
Also the ones that squeeze out like jelly in Flash Gordon.
Yes.
There are so many. There are so freaking many.
What's the right answer you're looking for?
Yeah.
No. I thought of so many, but the two, I brought it up last week, which is Mission Impossible 3, where Felicity takes a bomb in the brain and it causes her eye to like go... It's so gross.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I can never forget the rest of my life, my whole life, I'm cursed with always thinking of Slumdog Millionaire whenever I see any trauma to an eye.
I have not seen that movie.
I still
haven't seen that movie. That's the Danny Boyle thing that won.
Yeah,
the
but
best
what?
So okay, so Scott Johnson, don't listen. So there's an orphanage where they're trying to use the kids to get money, and blind kids get more money. So. They are blinding the children.
Yes. Oh.
Right, with a hot spoon or something.
Oh, yeah. a bunch of slum dogs. Oh!
Oh, that's bad, dude.
It's so awful. And I just can't, like, trauma and horror that's directed at eyeballs.
That's pretty rough, yeah.
How have you seen Quarantine 2 and you haven't seen Slumdog Millionaire?
This is what I'm saying. I have a problem. It's a Netflix problem because Slumdog Millionaire isn't on Netflix right now. You know what I mean? And I'm in the mood for a bad horror movie. So that's what ended up happening. But, okay, I got one more that's real gross with eyes. And it's my favorite of the two movies, and people argue with me all the time. But I think 28 Weeks Later is a lot better than 28 Days Later. And I know people will fight me on that, speaking of Danny Boyle. I think that sequel's amazing. Okay, and there is
In 28 Days Later, Cillian Murphy puts his thumbs in a guy's eye.
No, not Cillian Murphy. He's not in this movie. He's out. He's not in this at all.
28
Weeks Later. It's the guy from Stargate Universe. He's Full Monty. What's his name? He's a scruffy little British dude.
Right. And he gouges a woman's eyes out?
Yeah, his wife's eyes out after he gets infected by the rage virus and goes after her. And she's somehow immune to it. And she just thumbs in those eyes. And it's extremely graphic and disheartening. You're like, wow, that is certainly one way to go.
Almost the Uber trope. It feels like we've been on the search for the Uber trope, and this is almost the one where it's hard to think of a film where they don't go for the eyes.
Absolutely.
Even like a Schwarzenegger movie, wrestling with some guy from India or something, and someone's trying to gouge the other guy's eyes out.
It is an easy place to go for. Like, it's a big vulnerable. It's a very vulnerable spot.
That's where you're taught.
Yeah, I dare you to watch a Friday the 13th film that doesn't have eye trauma.
Oh, yeah.
I dare you to watch Total Recall and not remember
That one's pretty good.
Get your ass to Mars.
Yeah. Or even, even Star Trek First Contact, where the very beginning is the dream sequence with Picard. He's remembering his Locutus of Borg time, and a freaking Borg missile comes out of his eye and clamps down on the rest of his eyeball. Even that is hard to watch. I think natural think about it. As human beings, what is the one sense we need the freaking most to function? Sight. So therefore, what is one of our greatest fears, irrational or otherwise, is that we will be stopped from seeing.
True
story really quick here. We were telling Tristan, or my uncle was telling Tristan a story about our Hungarian grandmother, that she was fending off a German soldier when she was growing up, a kid in Hungary, fending off a German soldier who was attacking her by jamming her thumbs into his eyes.
Oh.
And Tristan's response was, wow, I didn't think she was that kind of grandma.
That is epic, dude.
It's such a great response.
I should have gone first.
Wow. Yours is going to not end as heroic.
I'm sorry.
Alitza was a Nazi. So wait, tell us your story there, Randy.
I was just going to appreciate you. Like, you gave me a huge warm fuzzy when you said missile. It made me think, I want to go load up my Atari and play Missile Command.
Missile Command. Missile. Incoming. That reminds me of something else. Missiles. Oh, I know what it is. Playing your video, Wipeout, not the stupid TV show of people falling off stuff, but Wipeout, the racing hover game.
Yeah.
Whenever you'd pick up missiles, a British voice would go, missiles. Oh, I used to love that.
That's where you got it?
Yeah.
You think?
That's where I think that's why I said it. I used to play that game incessantly. All right. Anyway, eyes. Yeah, eyes are bad. So watch out for those.
It goes to your soul.
Yeah. Nobody wants that. All right. What else? Anything else you guys have to say about this thing?
So much. This movie is just dripping with mediocre fun. You know, like it insists on putting an 11-year-old or a 13-year-old or whatever in a hot rod wheelchair and then showing him flying down the road, and as if that's not
passing
enough.
Cars,
like In order to keep you from freaking out about that, it has Gary Busey, his uncle, who built the hot rod, say, don't tell your mother, she'll kick my ass, and in some redneck way.
He used ass a lot. He said ass in about 15 different combinations. That was his thing.
Because he says ass.
He has a different kind of way of saying ass. But let it not be unsaid on this episode that the best actor in this film is Gary Busey, period, bar none. Mm-hmm. Nobody else is doing the work he's doing. Trivia has smeared all over it the idea that he was doing constant improv. He was ad-libbing most of his lines.
Oh, you get that feeling. And don't let it be said that Gary Busey never turned in a good performance.
Oh, he's great.
He nails this damn thing.
I agree. He's good in everything he's in, guys. There's just maybe it starts to melt into just pure Buseyisms by the end, like toward, you know, his career now.
I don't know.
But I find him really compelling to stare at and talk. Like, I just want to watch him talk.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. I know he's weird. I know he's got his problems.
We watched Drop Zone, and he was pretty bad.
Yeah, I forgot about Drop Zone. What was the other one?
He was really having some real life issues at that point, I think.
I think that Ice-T thing's on streaming now, the Dangerous Game or whatever it is, the Ice-T running from Busey movie.
Dangerous. The world's
most dangerous game or something.
Or something like that, whatever it is.
We've talked about this, and we can never remember the title of this stupid movie.
It's Hunger Games Busey Edition. That's what that is.
Right.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
I would watch that over and over. Anyway, all right, let's get to some clips. I got to load.
Dude, look out.
It was really hard not to capture everything I heard because there's so much good stuff. But one thing I noticed is the movie tried to rip off Jaws a few times, and you heard clips like this. Just lots of Jaws-sounding riffs and things, which was, you know, stupid. All right, here's John Locke. He's introduced as the sheriff of the town.
All right, without further ado, I'd like to turn things over to our own Reverend Lester Lowe.
You guys ever hear him sing? He's a really good, like, banjo guitar
guy. I totally believe that too.
Yeah, he's all into that. I'll have to see if I can find that while we're tracking this down. Let's see. I don't know what this is.
Make sure your brother's all right.
Oh, that's the who was that? That little
sis.
Is that the girl?
Yeah, that's Anne.
Anne of Green Gables. Okay,
is that right?
Yeah, this is her getting. She's a Canadian actress, by the way. Did a little digging on her.
That was a little boy, wasn't it? It might have been
his friend.
Make sure your brother's all right.
That turdy friend of his,
that ran over the
spider and then laughed. here's the sister getting pissed.
Oh, Janie! God damn it!
Dude.
Is there anything funnier than a well-delivered GD, man? There's nothing quite like it.
It's so weird how this teenage girl gets the job of cursing in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's so realistic. Like, it's so realistic it almost takes you out of the faux world of the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we need to have more of that, because I don't think we portray teenagers and kids. I don't think we portray them in a realistic manner in movies anymore. And this is one of the things I loved about this movie, Goonies, all those movies from that decade and era. I mean, E.T., all those movies had...
E.T. was great at that, yeah. Siblings like picking kids, on each other. Yep.
Right, what kids really are like. There's nothing like that in modern movie making. It's all...
You're right. Kids are so slick. They're so prefab in everything now.
They also all seem sibling-less in movies now. Even if they don't outright say it, they seem like... Nothing wrong with being an only child, trust me, but the idea of, well, you shouldn't trust me, I had six brothers and sisters.
Right?
But what I'm saying is,
trust me.
But I know nothing of this, but trust me anyway. But no, the idea that I don't know, there's a weird kind of I'm the only one here kind of thing.
Right.
And back in the day, there was a lot of sibling rivalry and fun poking and stuff like that. I wish there was more of that still.
Fun poking.
Let's do fun poking. When I was young, I never called any of my siblings a booger, but she liked to call him a booger. So here you go.
I hate you, you booger.
Oh, that's rough.
No, I thought that was the F bomb.
Let me hear it again.
I hate you, you booger.
That was booger.
Oh, wait.
Booger, that she calls him that right before that, too.
That was an F bomb.
There's no way that's an F bomb.
Play it again.
Okay, one more time. Here we go. Listen very carefully.
Booger.
That's booger.
It's definitely booger. But I was wondering if they actually, you know.
Randy also thinks there's an Revenge of the Nerds character named Effer.
No, I don't. I really don't.
Sorry, but I didn't mean to interrupt. I had to be sorry. Go ahead.
When I saw that, or when I heard that, I almost wondered if maybe she had originally, you know, the original script called for her saying that, but to get a better rating or a lower rating, they overdubbed her saying booger.
Might have. But she called him booger in the car.
A few times she calls him booger.
Yeah, which is fine. She wasn't referring to that the other booger.
Gee dang it, I hate you, booger.
Gee dang it. All right, here's a baby argument. I don't remember what this is about.
I told you, babe, it ain't my baby. Don't you ever drag me off like that again.
You know it's your baby.
Look, you know, we had this conversation before. Sorry, babe.
I have to have some help. And
it's your oven, but it ain't my bun, goddamn.
Help me.
Remember the good times, he says.
It's not my son.
Was the whole movie ad lib?
Yeah.
Like,
it felt like it.
For sure.
And badly
edited. Where's
Montel?
Need him.
Yeah. That was great. I love it. That's my bun, but it ain't my oven, is what he said. Is that
yes,
what
your bun, that's your oven, but it ain't my bun.
Oh, that's what it was. That's a rejected Michael Jackson clip for sure, right? Did he decide to take that out of Billie Jean?
That's right. It was a last-minute lyric change.
It's not my oven. Or bun. Oh, whatever. All right, here's, I don't know. Oh, this is great. Her yelling again. This is good.
You always take his side because he's crippled. Well, it's not my fault he's crippled.
Oh, man.
Wow. Angry acting.
Calm down, darling.
Yeah. Take it easy, girl.
It's not my fault he's crippled. Well, we don't know the backstory. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
I've seen that Canadian thing known as Anne of Green Gables, and she's really good in it. And I don't know why she strikes me as kind of bad in this. Overacty and
her
bad.
IMDb photo, though, looks like she's caught mid-sneeze.
Really?
Hold on. Yeah. Yeah, Megan follows.
I gotta look her up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there we go. Oh yeah, she does like a.
You know it was great, right?
I think she's cute now. She is
cute.
Very attractive. Yeah. 45 and looking good.
You know what was surprising? Gary Busey's IMDb, not bad.
I haven't looked
his
at Busey.
Photo, really?
Yeah, not. It's not bad. It's not what you would think.
That's all right.
Yeah,
that's all right. He's got the Plastic Man or what's his name? The Fantastic Four Doctor. What's his name? He has his hair.
Oh yeah, the right, Mr. Fantastic, the white temples.
Yeah, look at him with his son Jake.
If you cover up one of his eyes, he looks like he's looking in a totally different direction.
He does. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh,
look at him and his son. Look at the picture with him and Jake doing the hand in the air. Do you see that picture?
Look at that,
dude. Jake Busey with the hair, man.
Wow,
that's crazy.
The weird thing about Gary Busey is you don't assume that he has a disease or a condition that's causing his eyes to look in different directions.
Right.
You just assume
that they operate independently.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just drunk. He's blitzed out of his mind. His brain can't control his eyes right now.
He's shaped funny, too. That celebrity wife swap picture there by the pool where he's got a little kid between him and the lady.
Right.
There's something misshapen. I don't know if this is all from his accident, his motorcycle accident, or what, but that's not right. Look at all that.
I'm sorry. I think Gary Busey's just...
He's a national treasure, dude. Don't get me wrong. I think he's fantastic, and I wouldn't want life without him, but to hell, man.
Mm-hmm.
Locke is very sweary.
Hey, fuck off.
There you go.
That was great. That's my favorite phone conversation in a movie ever.
It's pretty good.
But it's the hatch.
Which hatch is it? All right. Reminds me of Five Pants All Stars. It's freaking me out.
I hope that all that stuff, I mean, we talked about this several times, that a lot of this stuff was improv. And I just can't help but to feel that was really improv. If like he was going along in a conversation, we got to pretend like you're having a one-way conversation on the phone.
Right.
And this the end, he's like, I got to ramp this up a little bit. I got to make this, you know.
This is my big moment.
Right.
Isn't it weird? I don't know if I'm the only one that does this. This has nothing to do with the show, but at Nerdtacular, when Brian hosts the Frog Pants All-Stars, the questions that we had there, they haunt me. So like it's because it's so intense and you're on stage, I think, and everyone's looking at you and you've got hard questions to answer and you're kind of still freaked out by the crowd. And so anytime I hear anything, you said the hatch. Immediately I'm thinking of all the hatch names, the question that you had this year.
Right, right.
And it's so powerful in my mind. It's like I've been touched in a bad way or something.
The pressure when you're up there. There's no doubt that there's a whole different kind of pressure when you're up there.
I'll have you know, I was the one who was haunted last year because my team lost. Yeah. And so this year, I wasn't haunted at all. Like, all I could feel was, oh, I'm so glad Brian Ebbett asked a question to name all the Doctor Who doctors because I had Tom Merritt sitting over there. I named the three I knew, and then he named like 20 more.
Yep.
It was great.
Yeah, that was crazy. Anyway, just wanted to mention that. Here's a great joke in the cafe. And by the way, the guy that was such a jackass in the cafe all the time and that ran off like the super, you know, have my own guns, I'll go kill this thing myself guy.
Yeah.
He's in so many things. Mm-hmm. So many things. And he's not this, he didn't look anything like he looks. Normally, but if you look up that actor and you go, holy shite, you're in everything I've ever seen, dude. Like everything. Right. Anyway, here he is.
Which guy is that? Is that?
I'll tell you his name. It's right here. Oh, I'm still on Busey. Hold on. Let's scroll down.
I'm still on Busey.
Now I'm back on Follows or whatever.
Leon Russom.
Leon Russom. That's it. Look at his face. No, not him. Not that guy. That's the guy from Prison Break. And he's been on another movie we've done here recently, but I can't remember what. But
Bill Smitrovich?
Bill Smitrovich. That's it.
There it is. Yeah. Okay.
You look at that face and go, oh wow. Yeah, you're in everything.
He is.
Yeah,
he is.
Totally. See, didn't ring with his mutton chops. You don't recognize him. Mm-mm.
I thought you were going to go with Lawrence Turney here.
Yeah.
Oh, the guy who's in everything, because this whole movie, I was like, what is it that actor is reminding me of? And of course, the answer I thought of later was Reservoir Dogs.
There's no change in names.
You're not going to be Mr. Black. You give him Mr. Black. Everybody wants to be Mr. Black.
Yeah.
That guy, Lawrence Turney, he only has one possible role.
Yep. Be the guy with the bat.
Right, but apparently, according to Seinfeld, what was it, the Seinfeld lore, he would, like, steal stuff. Like, they'd catch him stealing stuff from the set.
Right. He was Elaine's dad or somebody's dad.
Oh, he was Elaine's dad. You're right. Yeah. That was Elaine's dad, the one that didn't like George.
Right.
Totally right.
Can I tell you a little thing from his bio?
Yes.
Lawrence Turney's bio. He's dead now.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Wow, that's really good.
All right, moving on.
This is how his bio reads. Legendary Hollywood tough guy on screen and off, remembered as the title character in Dillinger, the consummately brutal lover of Claire Trevor in Born to Kill, notorious also for his frequent, well-publicized past involvements in public altercations like barroom brawls and other real-life manifestations of rowdiness. In a 1973 incident, he managed to get himself stabbed. That is your bio for an actor. A working Hollywood actor.
It sounds like the bio for Vanilla Ice.
You needed to include the sentence right after that. Though now a puffy-faced, totally bald old man, he continues as screen
he's
actor.
He's a corpse. He's not a bald. That's why I stopped. He's a puffy-faced.
That's great.
Puffy-faced, bald old man.
By the way, big shocker here was on the West Wing. Take that.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, amazing. Right?
Can I hop back to Gary Buse's IMDb profile real quick? I mean, he has a great bio. If you haven't read his bio, it's a great bio as well. But he is proud of some of the things that we might not be so proud of. He has many stills from this movie. And so it was obviously something that maybe was kind of close to his heart and felt like he maybe put in a good performance. Mm. Because, you know, you only get so many pages there on the IMDb, I'm sure.
I lied. Sorry.
He chose to do.
I lied. He's not. He's the other guys in the guy. The other old guys in West Wing. This guy's not in West Wing. Sorry.
Oh, so that. Ripped off.
I know. Well, you know what? I better make sure because everyone was in that. Let's just make sure. 99. Yep. Yeah. He wasn't in that. He died. Oh, he was in Armageddon though. So no one asked, but I'm telling you now, he was in Armageddon.
He was considered for the role of Perry White in the 1978 Superman.
Oh, he would have been great.
Yeah.
Great Caesar's ghost.
Yeah, he'd have been
fine. You're not changing. You're red and blue. You're not changing the colors of your costume.
I would have preferred that over the guy they picked. The guy with the weird toupee. I didn't like him. He wasn't that
great. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird tubes.
That's all I remember about that guy. All right.
He probably said, nope, you're too puffy-faced.
More clips. Speaking of the bald guy. We didn't do the joke.
Joe Haller couldn't find his own ass if somebody rammed it full of radium and gave him a Geiger counter.
This guy had more of these kind of jokes throughout this movie than anyone I've ever heard. All right, here's your bald guy from Reservoir Dogs that we just talked about.
Now, you boys better turn down your thermostats or you can both get the hell out of here.
Peacemaker.
Guy's great.
He is.
Busey is the best thing in the movie. Here's a clip, long one. Here you go.
There's a guy sitting in the bar. Bartender, he says, hey, jackass, give me a drink. So the bartender pours him a drink. He drinks it, sits there for a while, says, hey, jackass, pour me another drink. So he pours another drink. The guy gets up and leaves. The guy that's sitting there says, hey, why do you let him call you jackass all the time? The bartender says, oh, he always called me that.
No, he's talking to Corey Haim in the wheelchair while his sister is in the kitchen giving him dye eyes.
Yeah. He's great, dude.
Throwing shade.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's the kind of thing that I think only someone who has a crazy ass uncle can watch this movie and appreciate and go, yeah, I can appreciate that.
And listen to how, again, national treasure Gary Busey emphasizes his P's on this next clip right here. Check it out. Oh,
I got three kings, read them and weep.
let me
clean the spit out of my eye and
read them and weep.
That used to be the thing, man. I used to do that all the time when we'd play cards. True story.
Yep.
Because of this.
Because of this Brian, movie? Shut up, really?
Brian, you are True story. From the South.
You are, dude.
I am. I am.
You must be from one of the Carolinas. All right. Let's do some angry acting. Every film has it. Here's this one.
He's not going to give up.
Well, he doesn't need you showing him how to do it.
Good Lord.
Jesus.
I could be angrier than you.
She sounded like Sally Field to me in that.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Like angry good. Sally Field. Let's try it again.
He's not going to give up.
Well, he doesn't need you showing him how to do it.
Forrest. You know?
You know, she was the angriest. She was the angriest she ever was when she was in Mrs. Doubtfire. I don't know if that was true or, but yeah, she just seemed so angry.
She
in that movie.
Seemed pretty pissed. Yeah,
in that, she's pretty yeah. angry in Lincoln.
Is she? Pretty, yeah, she Mary Todd Lincoln, grandmother. Raunch. Yeah. She was a raunch in real life. Always pushing him around.
I just reminded me of how much I was stressed out watching this movie. Like the angry acting really kind of took it to a level.
You talking about Lincoln or this?
This movie, oh, this okay. movie, that the clip you just played reminded me of things that I didn't like about this movie.
Oh, all right.
Stephen King always makes you feel unsettled, and I know he kind of distanced himself from this, but I really felt like this was one of the movies that really felt more like that. True.
It was after I was hit by the car, and then wrote a story in my books about it.
Right. It felt just like Pet Sematary. I mean, there's a lot of anger and just aliens and. Like a rainy
I do not do a good Stephen King voice, but I still like doing it.
I thought that was pretty good.
Which reminds me, just this week, I'm at Blizzard Entertainment. I'm out in the courtyard. A complete stranger walks up to me. Like this, I mean a complete stranger. Someone who does not work at Blizzard, was there for some sort of contractor thing, walks up to me and says, I'm sure you get this all the time, but man, you look precisely like George Lucas.
Ooh, really? Were you wearing a turtleneck or what were you doing there to hide your waddle that apparently you don't have?
Okay, I tried a hair product that I never used before and nice. It made my hair look this wavy poof.
Oh, like his does.
Yeah. But the thing is, George Lucas's wavy poof is all gray and mine is all brown.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the? I felt offended in that moment. Yeah,
the hair product, a great hair product name would be Wavy Poof, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
That'd be really good. That's awesome. Did you turn to him and say, listen,
After he left, I turned to my coworker who was standing next to me and I did that. I don't know why he's trying.
I've sold that all to Disney now. I don't know who you are.
Maybe this should be a thing we start doing, going up to random people and tell them how they look like a person they wouldn't want to look like Lucas or, you know, you like Gary Busey.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was evil, is what I'm saying.
It was evil.
Yeah, I agree. I'll give you that. All right. This hurts. Oh, this is great. I don't want to give it away what it is. So here it is. Check it out. It's one of my favorite lines.
Oh, that hurts my parts.
There you go.
I don't even remember that.
The wrestler guy watching wrestling.
Yes, he did.
Was watching some fight between, quote unquote, the Rebel and some other unnamed fake wrestler. And he goes like that. Whoops, right now.
Oh, that hurts my parts.
Fantastic. That's really good.
Then he went outside and got it up.
Yeah. I watched that and thought, this is why Brian Dunaway loves this movie. Things like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, maybe that's the reason why I do like this movie, because I can relate. Everything in this movie, I'm like, yeah. I live in a small town.
Yeah, I get it. I got it. There's a kid up the road who's paralyzed and drives around on a motorcycle made out of nothing. That's fantastic. Right? Here's more Jaws. Jeez, pay Spielberg a little money.
No kidding. Right?
For hell's sakes, like, John Williams or something.
Flip over the sheet music and you've got a whole different song.
Yeah. And by the way, I know I don't want this to go unsaid. It's nothing to do with this, but it reminds me that the news that John Williams will be scoring the new Star Wars film is way better news than people think it is. That is a really important thing in my mind.
I think so too. That music is so important.
Music and sound effects. If they don't hire that other guy back, I forget his name, but he's doing stuff for Pixar
Lucas.
Lately. No, the other guy, not Lucas.
I'm good. I got married. I got a little kid now, and everything's fine.
No, I can't think of his name.
Ben Burtt.
Is that it, Ben Burtt?
The sound effects guy?
Yeah, that's him. If they don't get him back, they're really screwing up if they don't get him back. Anyway, all right, moving on. Guy in the bar again, another joke.
This whole investigation has been about as efficient as a submarine with screen doors.
I love it, dude. Love his stupid, dumb...
I just can't wait for a way to use this one.
It's going to be great. This movie's like a broken car. It's got two wheels and a monkey on the... I don't know how you do it. See, he's the guy. I'm not the guy. Here's another one. Dad scream time. There you go. That was her.
I knew that one was. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, oh, that's getting added to the.
That's pretty good. Oh gosh!
Wow!
It gets better the more you play. It
tremendous. Does. Play it again. One
All
more
right,
time.
One more time.
This is quickly becoming the quintessential film sack film that I refer to when people ask me, like, what's a film sack movie? This right here.
This one right here is for sure. Bullet. All right, lemonade in your pants.
I don't know.
What's the matter, Bobby? You're going to make lemonade in your pants?
I ain't scared. Let's go.
I ain't scared.
You're going to make lemonade in your pants?
Gross.
Huh?
Gross.
Punk?
It's a gross way to look, at it. Here's that same lady screaming again. There you go.
Wow.
That was
Gary
Busey. That.
Yeah, that's not bad. How about there's, I don't know what this one is.
There is no comfort.
It's Herb. It's Herb again.
Herb in his suit.
That's right after.
The more you plant, the better it gets.
Those are rare. Gotta keep those close. Let's see. Making Corey Haim play saucy. Oh, yeah. I haven't really played much Corey Haim, if you noticed here, but here's some here.
Yeah, Jane's walking around in all these new clothes showing off her tits, acting like nobody ever had tits before her.
Jeez, son.
Wow.
Easy, buddy.
Feldman slapped that kid.
Yes. Where's Feldman? Where's his only support system? Let's see. Busey. Oh, another big, great Busey moment.
Ta-da!
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
I think I'm going to use that on the morning stream for something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Scream and cans, I wrote here. I don't remember. Oh, I remember this. Okay, here you go. I like how long it goes. Just keeps going. I thought that was pretty good.
That's because there was an uncomfortable stare that was going on right there, and it was just raining down cans.
Yep, right. More Busey.
You're Miss Polly Practical.
There you go.
With the P's.
Polly Practical.
Let's see, another, I don't know. Oh, this is great. Okay, the priest. This is my favorite thing he said through the whole thing, and I want to play it loud and proud.
You meddling little shit!
Yeah!
Would have gotten if it weren't for you kids.
You meddling. There's almost like a melody to it. Like,
you meddling little shit!
Yeah! Someone make a song.
It's like a, it sounds like Kevin Kline, like a Kevin Kline humor line. Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. That's not bad. All right. I don't know what this is.
You're going to fall in the river.
Oh, yeah. Freaking guy. All right.
Or I'm going to drive you into it one.
Something about a horse.
I'm beginning to feel like a horse's ass.
I'm getting a familiar feeling coming over me. I'm beginning to feel like a horse's ass.
A horse's ass. It's like a whole word. One word. Horse's ass. And then finally, Mr. Scott Fletcher.
You better watch your mouth right now. You're on thin ice with me, son.
All right. Okay. Take it easy there, buddy. All right. That's it. There's your clips. Let's get on to the checklist. Beheading or otherwise grisly death of a town nobody. Check. Signature music riff and one-person camera for werewolf creeping scene. Check. Doesn't really see the creature that well, picking off town misfits one by one. Check.
Right?
I hate that about this movie. Mm-hmm. Number four, Angry Bob. Angry Mob. Watch out for Angry Bob.
Bye, Bob.
I like Angry Bob. Oh, there's an Angry Bob coming this way. Get out of the way, man.
Every town has him. Angry Mob tries to take the law into their own hands. Check. And finally, the priest you least expect is, wait for it, the werewolf. Check. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get to some Star Trek connections. And we have there, let's see, William Newman plays Virgil Cutts. On TNG, he played Kalen Trost in the episode The Host. Terry O'Quinn, Lost's Locke, was Sheriff Joe Holler. And TNG, played Admiral Eric Pressman in the episode The Pegasus. I remember that. Leon Russom, he played Bob Coleslaw in this. Oh,
Coleslaw. It's too close.
As
it's too
close. To Bob, really blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Star Trek VI, played Commander-in-Chief named Bill. In DS9, he played Admiral Todman. In the episode The Die Is Cast, AIE. A little shout out.
Yep.
Lawrence Tierney. Owen Knopfler in this. In TNG, played Cyrus Redblock in the episode The Big Goodbye. And on DS9, played the Regent of Palomar in the episode Business as Usual. Jay Chataway. Original music on this thing. In TNG, right. DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise. Five-time Emmy-winning work for music on Trek. Musical scores for numerous episodes. And then finally,
great job, Daryl.
Finally, Bill Smitrovich. guy we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Andy, his name is Andy Fairton, but it looks like Farton. Andy Fairton on DS9 played Michael Webb in the episode Past Tense Parts 1 and 2. Soundtrack great. I'd give it a... I didn't like
it. The soundtrack was not good.
That's a strange letter. You just...
Yeah, this, the letter...
You know what would have made this movie 100% better? A good rock and roll soundtrack like Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah. Christine.
Yeah. Who made who?
I could have gone for that.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
By the way, you know what letter comes after? This letter here. The letter. There you go. All right. Let's sum it up. 140 characters or less, please. Let's start with Randy.
Silver Bullet. The title is a reference to the surefire way to kill a werewolf. Watching the movie is a surefire way to kill your last shred of belief that Stephen King is a good writer.
Oh, Tommyknockers. I should read that and see how bad it is. You clearly are not a fan. Brian Dunaway.
Silver Bullet, like a gas-powered wheelchair given to you by your drunk uncle. It may be a bad idea, but who cares? Gas-powered.
Yeah, very nice. And then Brian Ibbett.
Silver Bullet, a Stephen King film adaptation that sits smack dab in the middle of failed Stephen King adaptations that directors had no idea what to do with. But those films didn't have Gary Busey.
Ah, oh, perfect. Nicely done. All right, the judges are back. We have an alternate title. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 20 Deaths Till We Get to See the Creature. That's the name of the film.
Exactly.
Emails real quick. Got a couple here. One from Sabrielle. She's a girl. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a cool wizard name.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrielle lifted her wand and destroyed Mr. Potter. Hey guys, listen to this episode, or listening to the episode and hearing It's Guy movie. I don't know what that means. Anyway, it reminded me of my date for this when I came out. Oh, when it came out. Sorry.
That had a totally different meaning the way you read it.
I just realized that her subject line probably said the title of the movie, and I didn't bring that over, so that's why I'm confused. Anyway, my date at the time was all for seeing the movie, and she tagged along. Oh, okay, she did come out. So I've got it right. I got it right by accident.
Wow.
I was excited for movie explosions until I started watching, and while I followed along, I thought it was okay. Apparently, my girlfriend didn't think so. About 30 to 45 minutes in, I received this huge slug to my arm. That frickin' hurt. Apparently, she was so angry she shouldn't, or couldn't, rather, follow along, and I had to take it out on me and spent the rest of the film brooding. Oh, well, I wasn't going to leave, but was a lot of money to spend for me at 20 years old. Love the show. All right, now I'm pissed because I don't know the name of the movie because it makes no sense until we know that. So hold on.
Sabrielle, that was fantastic because I can relate to getting punched in the movie theater.
Some of all fears. Yes. That's what it was.
Oh,
all fears. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
You did deserve a punch.
I did. Or she did. I didn't.
I do too. Love the show, though.
Yep. Eric wrote in, says, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. An old, excellent 1959 yes. Disney film with some cool special effects. Sean Connery is in it. I think it's well worth a watch. No idea if it's streaming, though, Eric. Well, Eric.
I don't mind being in that.
We'll find out. And if it is, it seems like one to add.
Yeah.
We like weird stuff like this, and we're all into some. We haven't seen an old movie in a while. So we're down with that.
We used to hit the 50s movies every once in a while.
Yep.
Done that in a while.
Now, next week, though.
Part of it is Netflix. Netflix is streaming a particular kind of film. So, for example, next week we're watching Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
because
right.
Why? Because it's streaming on Netflix.
Right. By the way, here's Terry O'Quinn playing a guitar on MTV, kind of unplugged style. Ready? Here you go.
Hey there, little slugger. How do you do? I'm the man who lives next door. Sure is nice to meet you. I could be a good daddy, too.
You. It's a kind of a weird song, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
I'm a little alone. I'll be the best she's ever known. I'll be a good daddy. Yeah.
I played this on autopilot once, but Terry awesome. O'Quinn rocking out on a guitar.
Huh.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Way to go, John Locke. Next week, Tomb Raider, speaking of not that old.
Yes. We just saw her daddy.
We sure did.
Mm.
He done got spit out in that snake. Oh, that was a while ago. it's Angelina Jolie in the role of Tomb Raider, Lara Croft, and there's a Lara. Has anyone decided? Lara? I don't know.
Lara.
Randy always says Lara.
Do you say Lara Croft?
No, I say Lara.
Who says Lara? Randy? You say Lara?
That's Randy.
Lara Croft. Lara Croft.
You said
really?
Lara?
Really? I could have swore you said Lara.
It's Lara, the Jim Lara report.
I was making a joke. Lara. Lara Croft.
Well, I hear some people say that. Like, I don't know if it's...
And it's probably right.
It probably is. Probably the British way or something.
No.
Fish
not.
And chips, Lori, Lou, all those things. So there it is. Tomb Raider next week. Prepare by watching it. Streaming on Netflix and available now. I have not seen it or its sequel. I've never seen these movies, so...
I started watching part of it one day, and I had a gag reflex.
Well, good. Well, then you can start over and do that all over again. So looking forward to bringing that to you next week and other films shortly after that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening, especially you at home. Well, I guess only you at home. We don't do this live, so thank you at home for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. That's going to do it for us. Let's get the hell out of here. I want to thank you guys for being here, and I want to say this. You can go to our website, filmsack.com. That's the place to go, filmsack.com. You can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We'd love your recommendations and your feedback. Follow us on Twitter, @FilmSack, and leave us a review on iTunes if you're so inclined. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
I will slap you.
Hell no. Well, that didn't work at all. Hold on.
What the?
There.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I'll fix that in post.
You know what I've got to say to that.